All right, welcome to Season 3, Episode 31, also known as Episode 103 of the Retro Game Club podcast. I'm Hugh, and joining me is someone who just had all his source code leaked, Rob.
Yeah, how does that keep happening? I think it's because I put it up on GitHub.
Right. I don't know if that counts as a leak, but yeah, that Twitch story was kind of crazy, so it seems they're claiming it was a hacker. I figured it was a disgruntled employee.
Yeah, that's what it has to be, right? If it's everything, I mean, they got everything, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, you have to be very, very bad at security that someone outside of your org could get all of that.
Yeah, it's got to be inside. But what's been going on? It's been so long since we've recorded.
Yeah, it's been kind of busy few weeks. What have I been doing? So I've been talking a little bit to Nate, the creator of Doodle World, NES game that we like a lot. And he wanted to let people know that he is going to be at Midwest Gaming Classic in like 4 weeks. And he's going to have a station set up with demos of Doodle World and I believe some cartridges that will be exclusive copies for Midwest Gaming Classic. Same game, but like different case or different packaging. I don't know the specifics, but something exclusive about the game at Midwest Gaming Classic.
Very cool. When is that again?
Yeah, it's a good question. They just sent an email today explaining their updated COVID policy, which again is not from them. It is from the city of Milwaukee, which is important because yelling at them that you don't like their policy doesn't matter. It's not their policy.
Exactly. Yeah.
Also, if you don't like someone's policy, don't go.
Yeah. Simple yeah. So read up first.
yes. So when is it? It is 2021, guess. You know, you would think they would put that in big, big letters on the email, right?
I feel like it's soon. Is it the first weekend of November, maybe? I'm making stuff up
It's the first, I think, yeah. No, I think you're right. Hold on. November 5th through 7th.
There you go.
In Milwaukee. I think it will be kind of sparsely attended. I don't know. So the policy, which again is not, this is was dictated to them. Mm-hmm. So don't take it out on them, please. It says all guests 12 and over must provide proof of COVID-19 vaccination or a negative COVID test within the past 72 hours.
Okay.
By coincidence, I will have both due to required test for something else. For all guests 16 and up, you must have a photo ID that matches the name on the test and or vaccination record.
So you can't bring like your mom's test.
And masks are strongly encouraged, but not required.
All right.
So that is the policy.
Doesn't seem too bad to me.
It seems downright reasonable, but I'm sure someone will complain. Yeah, I have a feeling like they're getting a lot of flack from many different angles. Obviously, there's going to be people who object to, you know, required vaccine and masks and all that stuff. I don't really care. But they also get it from like, so they also get flack from people who don't think we should be doing anything at all. So every time they post an update, apparently, you know, that they're going to continue with the show, someone comments like, why are you trying to kill my children?
Great. I mean, they could just not go.
You could just not go. Not going is a perfectly viable option. And if you don't live anywhere near Milwaukee, it's not like they're creating a super spreader event that's going to get to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think they are really having a hard time with this. I think everyone is having a hard time with it. But again, the rules I just mentioned for their show are not their rules. That's what Milwaukee's telling them they have to do.
Yeah, yeah.
So, as they even explained the email, you can swear at us all you want. It's not going to change the policy.
Yeah. What else has been going on? Anything fun?
That is it for me, I think. What about you?
Oh, man. Well, we just took the family on a first vacation to Florida. I figured 2 hours was the longest my kids would stay on their first flight. And you know, have them see the ocean, yada, yada, yada. And first few days were great. You know, Florida's going to Florida. but on the last day, I did something really stupid. So do you have like one of those key fobs for your car? Or do you have a key?
I do not. I have an old school key.
Okay. So one thing you get used to with a key fob for your car is that if that thing is in your car, you cannot lock the car because it's in there. It knows it's inside the car. Yep. It has like a proximity sensor, at least on 99% of cars. I guess in a 2018 Nissan Rogue, it doesn't do that. So I had the key fob in my backpack, throw the backpack in the trunk. My wife's like, cool, let's go. You know, we're going to back to the airport to fly home. And she's like, cool, can you just lock the car? I'm like, the keys are in there. It can't be locked, of course. I lock the key fob in the car. And so,
yes.
Hertz ends up being a garbage company. We were on hold for 2 hours. In that time, I called Enterprise on accident because, you know, I just Googled Hertz helpline, and the first result from Google was Enterprise. I didn't realize it was Enterprise.
I believe they're the same company now. Yeah, I thought they were the same company now.
Well, their help desk is very different because I call that number. Okay. I instantly get a human, asks for the receipt number. Well, first, you know, I ask if you're okay, yada, yada, yada. What can we do to help? And he was like, we will be there very soon. This is no problem at all. Just give me your receipt number or your license plate number. I give them both. Obviously, it was wrong because it was a Hertz car and not an Enterprise car. So lesson learned there. But then finally, AAA got us open really quickly. We had to change flights. It was a stressful day. But in killing time, we were walking around the streets of Clearwater. And we walk by the Hulk Hogan store. He has his own store there. And we're looking at the Hulk Hogan statue, and all of a sudden a pair of keys fly past my head to this woman like 10 feet away from me. And I turn around, and Hulk Hogan is in his Dodge Charger. Like, that's what he drives. I wouldn't guess him for that car, but and he gives me thumbs up as I give him thumbs up. It seemed, I think the lady was the manager of the store, and she lost her keys, and he was just driving some keys to her and just threw them from his car. So that was pretty interesting. I got a thumbs up from the Hulk.
All right. I think the Dodge Charger is one of the only cars that can outrun police cars.
Oh, okay. Yeah, since a lot of police cars are Chargers. Yeah, yeah.
They are, yeah, depending which model. So, by the way, Enterprise owns National and Alamo. That's why I was confused.
Okay.
Avis, if you remember Avis, they own Budget, Payless, and Zipcar. And then Hertz owns a bunch of other things.
Yeah, well, Hertz is losing my business from now on. But anyway, in some kind of cool news, our podcast is like number one retro podcast last week in Croatia. So shout out to our Croatian listeners. It's a country I've always wanted to go to. My mom and my sister have been there, and they absolutely adore that country. I hear it's beautiful, and the people are nice, and apparently they have great taste in podcasts and video games.
Yeah, yeah. So thank you. I do wonder what retro systems are popular, because the systems we talk about would have been a time when I don't know anything about, I know close to nothing about Croatian history, but I believe they would, during the 80s and 90s, or at least early 90s, I would imagine it's a lot of like Russian computers and bootleg systems if there were game systems. I know it's a very vibrant gaming scene today.
Mm-hmm.
If you search like game store in Croatia, there's hundreds of hits.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's obviously a very popular pastime now, but I'm curious what kind of retro systems are popular. I'm always anything outside the United States, I'm always popular, you know, curious what retro systems were popular, because every country got completely different experience.
Well, Croatian listeners, please let us know. Email at retrogameclub.net. We'd love to hear from you. But that's all I got this one. I guess we should dive into some news.
Yeah, let's see. We will start with the hardware section. Sega Pico Flash Cart Adapter V2. So this is a project to build a flash cart adapter for the Sega Pico. which I own two of, and almost a complete collection of games.
So what does this mean by a flash card adapter? Like an EverDrive type thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Like an EverDrive thing.
So it's like an EverDrive project.
Only like half of the thing. Yes. Now the problem with Pico is that you also need the book pages to have any idea what you're doing in the game. So have you played a Pico before?
No, I haven't. I know what it is, but I've never seen one or touched one or anything.
Okay. So hardware-wise, it's very, very close to the Sega Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
So it uses these interactive books. Basically, there's a touch screen. So there's like a cartridge slot and then a touch screen. You don't actually have to have the book, but it is kind of hard to use without the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a touch screen and the book pages, and you know, you flip them over the touch screen to interact with stuff. So like there's a lot of like interactive story games on there. Again, it's mostly for kids.
Yeah.
So maybe you click a picture in the scene and then something happens on the screen. And then it has a D-pad and it has another touchpad with a pen that you can use to draw, because there's a lot of drawing-based games on it.
Okay. Huh.
And it's a... My kids both really liked the system when they were little. This is why I don't have it hooked up right now because it's so giant, but I do have it in storage and may hook it up again someday. There are a couple games on it that are like legitimately decent games.
Oh, yeah, it was geared towards younger kids, right?
Yeah, yeah. The games are all geared towards young kids. There's a lot of Disney-branded stuff on it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a cool system, and I like this project just because I like the Sega Pico.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like the soldering is too complex. A lot of soldering, but nothing too tiny. And in more kind of Sega news... Kind of the most pointless news, possibly the most pointless news of the episode, is Sega is releasing a Master System add-on for the Mega Drive MIDI in Japan, but it doesn't do anything. It's
a decoration.
Yeah, yeah. I did think at first I kind of wanted this, but no. No, I don't think so. Don't they also have like the tower, like the 32X tower as well? I could be wrong.
Yeah, you could do, I thought it had like a Sega CD 32X tower you could add to it, something like that. No, that sounds really, really familiar. I think you're right.
But if you want to not play your Master System games on it too, you could get this, and let's see how.
My suggestion was you could just buy a little tiny hat and put a little tiny hat on it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is $40 for a piece of plastic.
Yeah, yeah. So I can go to like Salvation Army and get like a little mini fedora or something.
Yeah, yeah. And not retro news, but I thought was cool and fascinating is you can emulate PS3 a lot better now. The emulators have been coming along with the RPCS3 driver updates. Mm-hmm. Apparently they work great on AMD graphics cards. And yeah, so, I mean, you can emulate God of War 3 and Infamous 2, both great games, in your computer now, which just is crazy because I remember thinking the PS3's, what was their chip called? The Cell Processor. I just thought that was crazy cool.
I was going to the Emotion Engine or whatever they called the other one.
Oh, yeah, that was in the 2. Yeah, but...
Yeah.
That thing is like nine cores, so pretty crazy that what they're doing with that.
Oh, and by the way, we've moved on to the homebrew ROM hacks and emulation portion.
Yes, so. Yes. Sorry about that. What do we got next here?
I did not read this one. It looks cool. Interactive clips for Game Boy.
Yeah, so this is crazy. So this is a emulator update kind of thing where if something crazy happens in your Game Boy game, what this does, and you want to share it with your friends, what this does is it takes a snapshot of really where you are in the game, kind of like taking a snapshot, you know, in any emulator. And it also takes just enough of the ROM you're using, packs it up in a file format, and can send. You could send these online to your friends, and they can see like what crazy thing happened to you while playing any Game Boy game. So a really interesting project. Someone smarter than me created this.
Bug report?
What's that?
Yeah, so it's like sending a bug report. Like sending a bug report, right? Like Windows crashes and you send some information to Microsoft. Is that what this is for?
But what this does is when you load it up, it actually shows on the screen what buttons were being pressed at the time, and it actually shows gameplay.
Okay.
So instead of, you know, capturing video or something, it's capturing pretty much everything else to create, well, and emulating this ROM again, but at the exact same point for a certain time period. Kind of cool and strange project.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was on Hackaday.
Then we have Q1K3, a Quake-inspired game written in just 13K of JavaScript. That seems small. Is it actually importing like 7 terabytes of JavaScript from NPM or something?
Yeah, probably. But still really impressive. It's it has what, like more than one level. It has like 5 different monsters and a few different guns, and looks pretty good. I mean, for 13K.
Yeah, looks really good.
So you could check this out on their website in our show notes. And you can also play Joust on Coco 3. So I guess that was coded in BASIC or ported to BASIC on the Coco 3. And it looks pretty good. It looks like it plays pretty good. Were you able to check out that video?
I was actually watching it right now. And yeah, looks better than a lot of other computer versions of Joust.
Exactly. Yeah, pretty impressive. I'm actually surprised that didn't exist before, but now it does.
Yeah. So let's see. We have another section I'm calling Takedown Letter Pending. So these are projects that seem cool, but will be gone very, very soon. Amateur Coder is creating GBA Remix. So a game inspired by NES Remix, but with Game Boy Advance games. Nintendo will be sending them a takedown letter.
Yeah. So I read this a while ago, and again, I'm bringing up save states, snapshots and save states. She isn't, I guess it says she doesn't have much programming experience, but, you know, I'm really summarizing here. But she did something with, well, ROMs and save states and kind of mashed them all together to create this GBA remix. So pretty impressive job for, you know, lack of formal programming experience.
Yeah, it's a good project. It's just unfortunately the kind of thing that, yeah, that Nintendo will definitely send you a takedown letter for. All right. Fan-made Super Mario Sunshine expansion mod. That's getting a takedown letter.
Yeah, yeah. Super Mario Eclipse. It looks cool. I mean, it looks all right, but I have an issue with this article. And my issue is, here is the first line in the article. Despite its age, Super Mario Sunshine is still a warmly regarded title in the Super Mario franchise. Is that true? I don't think that's true.
I don't think that's true either. I think most people consider it to be in the bottom half of Mario games.
At least.
It's hard to say like bottom third or bottom quarter because you have like the CDI Mario games, you know, that kind of stuff. I don't think this is a beloved game.
No, it's the writer of this article does not seem very familiar, but I am glad they are covering it because, the video shows that the person did a great job, but, I mean, there's new moves and you could play as Luigi with sunglasses and, all new levels. So, you know, great job, but I don't think I need Mario Sunshine for a while in any form.
And now for our last news section, other odd and interesting things. So two, I guess we'll use the term classic, games are getting reprinted. So one of them is Gym Power, which I've never heard of. Gym Power is like on every single console.
I've never played it.
Gym Power game.
Have you played it?
Yeah, this is, no, I'm not, not that big of a fan. So this is Gym Power, The Lost Dimension in 3D. I don't remember this being released in America. And then Stone Protectors is getting a Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis release. That one's interesting because the Sega Genesis release was a prototype ROM. I don't know if they finished the game or it's just the prototype ROM on a Genesis card. This is an okay game. It's like a TMNT ripoff. I don't really remember what the Stone Protectors are.
I don't remember.
Maybe they were... What year were the Stone Protectors a thing?
I've never heard of either of these two things.
Okay.
They're both £45 if you want to buy them.
Mm-hmm. So let's see here. The Stone Protectors. So it's a cartoon series in action figure line that started in 1993. I was already legally an adult. So I was not into the Stone Protectors probably.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Perhaps some of our younger listeners, well, younger than me at least, had Stone Protectors as kids.
And possibly British too. I don't have any memory of these things. A developer has returned back to his code after 4 decades just to fix some typos. So he wrote, looks like he submitted some of those basic codes that you would see in a magazine and type into your computer to play. And he debugged it after 40 years.
Nice.
Yeah.
I have one game demo that I have been sitting on my hard. I started working on like almost 3 years ago now that I can't motivate myself to finish. So it's good to know that there's always time.
Yeah. Yeah. And some more cotton ports coming our way. We have... what do we have here? We have Cotton Guardio Force Saturn Tribute.
So this is weird. So like Cotton and ActRaiser were both Game Club picks for us recently. Well, they were your picks, each of them, right?
Yeah, and none of them, I knew nothing about these ports beforehand.
Okay, interesting. So I we got to see if this trend continues, like the games you pick getting remakes.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to suggest like a dozen games to you.
Yeah, absolutely. But we have the, let's see, we have Panorama Cotton, Cotton 2, and what else do we have here? Guardian Force, which I've never played. So, yeah, one of these is just kind of like Cotton, the one we already played, and the other one is more of a Space Harrier style game. And I have kind of an attachment article to this. Someone posted that they were measuring the latency in these games and it was horrible, like more than 10 frames. And the development company released a statement that they acknowledge this and they're going to fix it soon. So that's pretty cool. Obviously didn't port these games. It's probably an emulator with a front end, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's an emulator. It's not a rewrite.
Yeah, yeah. And
you can probably go to the company's page and look for like the open source disclosure form to find out what emulator they forked.
Now, I did order this. It's only released in Japan right now, but I did my order from eBay, so we'll see what happens there. And it was just for a retail price. It wasn't marked up at all with free shipping. So I was pretty shocked. And that's our news. We have kind of a topic this time. So sometime since our last recording, the Nintendo 64 turned 25 years old. And we just wanted to have a little retrospect about it now. Yes, in the U.S. And, you know, like we say with all our topics, we aren't going to dive into the technical stuff and all the history. It's more of our perspective. And we want to hear all of your perspectives and memories about this. But... yeah, it was September 29th, 1996. So yeah, what were you doing in September 1996?
I was attempting to go back to college. So as I've mentioned before, like after high school, I kind of dorked around and worked at a video game store for a while. Realized that was not really a viable career path. And went back to college in fall 96. And at that point, I was working full-time. I had a full-time job. I was in college full-time. So I played approximately 0 hours of video games a week.
Yeah.
I was only vaguely aware that the Nintendo 64 launched. I mean, like, I knew it was coming because I had worked at a video game store earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. But I left before we even started taking pre-orders for the thing. Like, we didn't have a date for it when I left. So I did not get a Nintendo 64 until December 1999 when I was done with school. I took a lot of, like, summer in January classes. It was a good time to get one because a lot of games were being cleared out already. So yeah, I ended up getting a lot of games on clearance at Toys R Us for like $10 to $20. They weren't like bad games, but they were more than 2 years old, which for Toys R Us means got to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stuff like Shadows of the Empire and Perfect Dark and just like, you know, A graded titles for the Nintendo 64. And these are still in my backlog.
Nice.
So now I'm also sort of relieved that I did not work the Nintendo 64 launch because I went through the experience of the Saturn launch of like, system comes out, but there's no games for it.
Uh-huh.
And that was the Nintendo 64, right? It launched with what, one game? Two games?
Two games, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were a few that came out. So it was Pilot Wings and Mario 64. And then very soon after, Wave Race and Star Wars Shadow of the Empire. Cruisin' USA was supposed to be there, but that was December as well. So... Mm-hmm. I mean, you're waiting.
So you're talking a couple months.
Yeah.
Before you could get games. Yeah. That would have been complete miss. I do not envy anyone who worked at a game store during that time period. It sounds miserable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they were also supposed to get Tetrasphere, Turok, and Body Harvest. But I mean, two of those didn't come out till 97. One didn't come out till 98. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll never forget, you know, playing Mario 64 in that kiosk for the first time and thinking, you know, they did it. I have an SGI in the palm of my hands and, you know, the analog stick feels great. Mario finally feels like, well, not just Mario, but any character, it just happened to be Mario, feels like it's actually in 3D and it makes sense. And I got one the day before launch. Back then, I don't know if you remember, but for pre-orders, Toys R Us would give you just an IOU type thing.
Yeah.
And so I altered the date on mine. I forget how, but I thought I was really clever. And it wasn't until many, many years later that I found out that they just didn't care. Other people were just showing up and saying, can I just have my Nintendo 64? And they were saying, sure, here you go. And, yeah, I loved the system at first because, I mean, those first few games, there's not many of them, but those were great games. I mean, Shadow of the Empire is a fantastic game. Mario 64, I think, changed the industry, and Wave Race and Pilot Wings were fun games. You know, they may not be great games, but they're pretty fun. Mm-hmm. I love the sound of the Nintendo 64. Because it was cartridge, it had a pretty high quality MIDI samples in it, and you can almost tell a Nintendo 64 game just by listening to it. I think it sounds great. And
but I was going up against a system that could have Red Book audio.
Yeah, yeah. Which is probably why Square jumped from Nintendo finally.
Yeah, I don't know the whole history. I'm sure that was a factor. I think they just kind of got tired of working with Nintendo.
Now, while working in the game store, what was, you know, I mean, you left before, you know, pre-sales were a thing, but when you guys talked about it, you know, what was the feel of it? You know, was it excitement? Was it, well, it's not going to be CD, so no one's going to care about this? What were people in the industry, in the retail industry thinking about it?
I don't really remember thinking that far ahead. I'm thinking back to like my last couple of months. Mm-hmm. Which were like, you know, again, early 1996. So at that point, one, we were spending a lot of time like aggressively clearing out stuff.
Okay.
So like the 3DO, Jaguar, any remaining Sega Genesis stuff, you know, even remaining Super Nintendo stuff. We were getting some new Super Nintendo things, like the big launch. Maybe the last launch I worked was like Mario RPG, something like that. But it was really like, we just had the first Christmas of Saturn and PlayStation. PlayStation was clearly already well ahead of the Saturn. And it was a lot of rearrange the store because the front part portion of the store was still 16-bit systems. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was really like, get all that stuff to the back. It's all PlayStation up front, going all in on PlayStation, you know, because that's clearly the system that's going to win. And I don't think we were thinking about the Nintendo 64 much. We didn't have a date yet. And we were just like so swamped with PlayStation and also like Windows games, like Windows 95 made gaming on Windows, you know, on PC a lot easier.
Oh, yeah. People. Oh, yeah.
And we were selling a ton of Windows 95 games.
Interesting.
So
yeah.
it was just, we were just really focused on that. And like I said, pre-orders hadn't started yet when I left.
So what do you think about the system now? You know, I know you use a Nintendo 64 controller for a lot of your, when you have mm-hmm. to play an emulated game, but I mean, do you play a lot of Nintendo 64 or does it fall kind of short in your lineup?
Well, you know, like I said, I bought it in at the end of 1999 and GameCube, which we're going to do an episode about soon, came out, what, 2 years later, a year and a half later, mm-hmm. something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say closer to 2 years. And it was a very, very short system for me. Like I played through the Zelda games. Majora's Mask is still one of my favorite games ever. And I still have a giant backlog. I did really not play a ton of Nintendo 64 games. It's mostly been like a Zelda system for me. And because like RPGs are my favorite genre, man, N64 is not a good system for RPGs.
Which is so sad because it could have been. It could have been a great RPG system.
Yeah, you could have done ports of Grandia or whatever was mm-hmm. Popular at the time to it. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, if you could fit Resident Evil on a cart, you could pretty much fit anything on a cart. Yeah, Nintendo 64 is a system I want to love. I don't hate it or anything, but I was an SGI fanboy for mm-hmm. many nerdy reasons back in the 90s, and you know, I still have my SGI 02. I had a SGI Indigo 2, and I just thought it was so cool that they were working with SGI, and it just all felt so much more smooth than the PlayStation. But, man, going back to those games now, other than Mario 64 and the Zelda games, it's pretty rough.
Yeah.
But
well, the cruising games are pretty good. We talked about those recently.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
Star Wars game I like on there. Pod Racer. That's a I know it's on other systems, but it happens to be a pretty good version
yep.
on the Nintendo 64.
And what was it? 1080 Snowboarding, a shockingly great snowboarding game.
Yeah, I have that. That's in my backlog too. Did we play that? Was that a pick we had early on?
I think so. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that was.
So I must have played at least a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I really don't have much more to say about the system.
Yeah. What is still in your backlog for the system?
Oh, man. Probably the second Castlevania game.
There's a second Castlevania game?
So I think so. I thought the first one was horrible, but the second one was okay. Let me Google this quickly. Let's see. Castlevania Legacy of Darkness. So there you go. 1999. So I heard it's better than the first one. Other than that, I've never really played Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Okay.
I heard that's a great, fun game. And that's really about it. I've talked about on this show a lot that I had the Z64 Mr. Backup for my Nintendo 64. So I got to get a lot of the games through Usenet to play in a zip drive on the Nintendo 64. So I, really enjoyed the Bust a Move games. I'm not even sure that came out in the States or not. And there were actually some good wrestling games on the Nintendo 64 as well.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like we talked about this on another episode, but it is very good for pro wrestling games.
Mm-hmm.
And pro wrestling games generally are trash. but there were a couple good ones on there. Yeah.
But, you know, having the four controller ports built in kind of lends to that, you know, get mm-hmm. three of your friends over and beat each other up.
Yeah.
But yeah, not too much I have to go back to. I did a lot of Nintendo 64 renting and unfortunately piracy back then. But we do have some Game Club games too, if you don't have anything else on the N64.
No, just a happy birthday.
Yeah.
Nintendo 64.
Yeah. I guess I'll do mine first, since probably the lesser of the two games. So I did TV Sports Football on the TurboGrafx-16. It is a 1988 game in the U.S. and 89 in Europe, 91 in Japan. And it was also on the Amiga, the Atari ST, Commodore 64, and DOS, which I had no idea. So this was developed by Cinemaware, which I never really heard of, but they mostly just did the TV Sports franchise. And
no, they did. Cinemaware's done a bunch of stuff.
Not that I really recognized, though.
Okay. Okay, nothing. Oh, yeah, okay. I would buy that.
Yeah, nothing that stood out to me. But I think this is the best TV sports game, and that's not saying too much. I like this game because of a nostalgia factor. So when I got my TurboGrafx-16, I got, well, it came with Keith Courage. I got Bonk's Adventure. I got this game and Devil's Crush. And so, you know, a nice little lineup of games there, but not too many games. And it was a long time before I got any other games. And so I played the heck out of this and I got really good at it. If you want to be good at this game, all you do every time is if you're on defense, you do the long bomb play. And if you're on offense, you do the bootleg. And you just throw it straight each time and you get about 12 yards every time. And I don't know if it's possible to miss a field goal kick. I've never seen a field goal kick not go get me some points. So other than that, I don't think many people like this game. It feels like someone's first attempt at a football game. And it reminds me a lot of John Elway's football, which is not a bad thing. I like that game, but in some ways, John Elway's is better.
Mm-hmm.
But what are your thoughts on this one?
So just an observation I made on a different article once is that John Elway got a football game like 9 months after he got completely blown out in the Super Bowl by Doug Williams, who did not get a football game.
Wow.
So you can noodle on what the reason for that might be sometime. So the thing about Cinemaware, I know you're not like an expert on them. I've played most of their games.
Mm-hmm.
Their games all look beautiful and maybe with one exception, play terribly. Even the game I'm thinking of that plays, I was thinking Defender of the Crown plays all right, but the action scenes, like the jousting and the sword fighting, just are unbearable to play. The main like strategy part of the game plays fine because there's nothing moving. So Cinemaware is like a company that knows how to make things that look good, but doesn't really know how to like make games that are fun to play. And that's definitely my observation of TV Sports Football. Like it looked much better than any other football game of the same era, but the Mattel like LED handheld game is so much more fun.
I believe it. Yeah, I think it's a nostalgia factor for me.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yeah, I think so. Yeah, I describe this as a game where it's like football if all the players were on Quaaludes and had never played before.
that's pretty much it. And like you said, it is a beautiful game and it does have some good sounds and stuff in there, but kind of stops there. And
yeah, and that again, that's kind of the rub on all Cinemaware games.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
I didn't realize before this that the John Madden original football game came out on computers in the same year that this came out. And I've never played the original Madden game. Have you?
Yeah. It's very slow paced and it doesn't look as good as TV Sports Football, but it's much more accurate. You know, John Madden, he was a pretty big name at the time. And for Electronic Arts, they really, really wanted to have John Madden's endorsement on the game. Mm-hmm. Like, they weren't going to make the game without John Madden on it. And John Madden was not going to let his name be on the game unless it was, you know, a very, very accurate representation of football. He didn't want it. So the reason it's like, it was the first like 11 on 11 football game. So when they came to John Madden with the idea, it was going to be like 5-on-5 football. I don't know what it was, like 5-on-5. Some number that's not 11 players at a time, because they're like, well, with the hardware, you know, that's 22 sprites plus the ball. You know, like they're just explaining, they're trying to explain to John Madden, you know, sprite limits and that kind of stuff. Good luck, right?
Well, he's and, eating a giant turkey leg and.
Yeah, right. Well, they're on like a bus and he's eating a turkey leg. They designed most of the game, you know, on a train because he refused to fly. So the developers would literally get on these like 8-hour train rides with John Madden and just talk about football plays.
Oh, wow.
Like, yeah, so much of the AI in like playbook in that game came, actually did come from John Madden. And, you know, I think they got up to like 9 versus 9, I think was actually the number they pitched him. And he's like, nope, not going to put my name on that.
Wow.
So they had to spend years trying to figure out how to do 11 on 11 football within the hardware limitations they had.
Wow.
So it's a really amazing story. Like really the development history of Madden football is really fascinating.
But for TV sports football, not so much. They really.
Yeah. Yeah. I suspect whoever wrote this game did not know what American football was when they started.
No, it almost looks like they copied the plays from other games. Some of them look like exact screenshots.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, we're really dogging on it. I have fun playing it, but again, it's probably nostalgia factor. And
Well, it's definitely one of the best football games on the TurboGrafx-16.
Are there any? Oh, well, there's the John Madden one on CD, but are there any others? I can't even think of them.
No.
Okay, there you go.
What are the better ones? All right.
Yeah, your game was better.
Yeah, so I picked Road Rash because it turns 30. Or it did in September, at least. It did when we put the show notes down and then didn't record for a while.
Yes.
So I originally was going to play this on my Sega CD, but I could not get it to boot. I thought my Sega CD drive, I thought my Sega CD died. Sorry. I was like legit almost in tears.
Oh, no.
No. I'm like, oh, Sega CD's dead finally. Now what am I going to do? I'm going to have to buy like a analog or some clone system that's going to cost a lot of money. Wait, what's that CD clone system?
The Mega SG, or you could get, or the Mega SD.
Polymega. No, I'm thinking of the Polymega.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Cause I put in Road Rash and it booted to a screen that was totally blue and just had the word placeholder on it.
Interesting.
Now, I don't know in 1994 what I would have done about that. I just would have assumed I had a defective game. Like there is no way for it. It's just, literally just says placeholder. But today we have Google. And it turns out there's in Road Rash for Sega CD, it creates like a save file when you start up. But if it doesn't have enough space on the Sega CD to create a save file, it just goes to a blue screen that says placeholder.
Wow.
So great job by EA with their error handling there.
Yeah, that seems like a big one.
It's so trivial to patch too. Like I could write a patch for. I could write a patch that just put better text on that screen.
Yeah.
So then I looked at my Sega CD battery and found I still had saves on it from 1994.
That's incredible.
1994.
Yeah.
That is not a joke. My Turbo Duo battery like died well over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But not that Sega CD battery. And I don't leave it plugged in, you know, because it's got the big power bricks. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't leave my Sega. I have a power strip with an on-off, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even like, why I used to use the old Sega branded power strip until it exploded.
Yeah.
And I would just turn it off. So, like, it's not like I leave this thing on 24 hours a day. So, anyways, I settled instead for playing the cartridge version, which, like, as a racing game, it's not that great. You know, it's the same age as Outrun or Hang On, and those are both much better racing games. But I guess the appeal isn't really that it's just a racing game. It's the, you know, combat that you're on a motorcycle and you're punching other dudes in the head, right?
Uh-huh.
Like that's the point of the game. The racing, I guess, improves. I know Road Rash 2 is a much better driving game than the first one. But yeah, it was, as racing games go, it's okay. It's definitely not the best. It's better than Hard Driving. Not really that close to Outrunner. Hang on. I also played the Master System version, which is okay. It's very, very slow. It feels like it's running at like 10 frames a second or something. Mm-hmm. But it actually makes the game a lot easier.
That makes sense. Yeah. I didn't even know it was on the Master System.
Yeah. Yeah. There might be a Game Gear version too.
So
did you... There's a 3DO version. There's a 3DO version that I thought I owned, but it turns out I don't.
Did you get to play the Sega CD version at all?
No, because I didn't want to delete all my old save games.
Ah, okay.
You basically have to have an empty CD battery. Like, if you have almost anything saved, it's not... I don't know what Road Rash is saving. Like, I have multiple, like, RPG saves on there. You know, things where there's, like, actual data.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what Road Rash... I'm going to have to fire it up in an emulator and take a look at what it's saving. I just... It's so hard for me to believe that Road Rash needs more than 0K of data to save what it's doing.
Yeah, I know. Well... I did play, because I saw your notes here, I did play the Sega CD port, and the soundtrack is incredible. It's mostly Soundgarden and hilarious cutscenes that are just fantastic, and that's really what this game was for me on the Sega CD, is the cutscenes and the music. You already said everything about the racing. It's really annoying when cars are coming at you, because you see them for one frame, and then the next frame, they're pretty much on top of you if they're coming at you. There's no in between. Mm-hmm. And I really don't understand one of the cutscenes. So now...
Is there a video somewhere of all the cutscenes? Because I heard about this, and now I'm like,
yeah.
I saw your notes, and I'm like, what?
Yeah, so I'm not making fun of anything or making any kind of joke here. I legit want to know what's going on in this cutscene. So anyone can look this up on YouTube, and please, if someone can explain this to me, please do. So the first time I played it this time, I did really bad, and I got a "you lose" cutscene. You're a loser, something like that. And that amped me up, made me want to play more. It worked. It was fun. And so I did really good, and I got the winner cutscene where... this dude gives you a bunch of money for winning, and then you take some of that money, looks like a bunch of $5 bills, and you put it in his pants or his belt or something, and then you put a chain around his neck and pull him away as if you're going to make out. And I honestly don't know what's going on in this cutscene, because none of that makes sense. You know, it's not, you know, a gay thing or anything. It's just like none of it makes sense. In context of the game or anything that's happening. So I figure I blinked and missed something where I lost context or something, but...
Well, the scene I'm looking at here, you get in a convertible and some guys that look like the January 6th insurrectionists, like, load a woman into the car, and then you drive off and they all cheer.
Okay, I did not get that one.
Maybe it's a different ending based on which course you use?
I think it's course and how good you do.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, but...
No, I'm positive the guy in this clip was... Well, I saw him on the news. I'm just positive.
Yeah. The last line of my notes is pole position has smoother graphics than this game.
Yeah.
So, it is a fun game. Punching people on motorcycles and you know, getting away from the cop cars and stuff. Very fun. I actually played this game quite a bit, more than I've ever played it in the past, and I had a good time with it. But I should definitely try out the sequels if the racing part is better.
Ooh, there is an IMDb entry for Road Rash, so I could see who some of these actors are.
Ooh, nice. I hope it's someone good.
There is... Well, this is the PlayStation version. I wonder... They must have used the same clips, though, right?
It's gotta be, yeah.
These... Only one of the actors has a picture on IMDb.
Now, are you on IMDb from Street Fighter the movie?
Am I? Why? No, why would I? I'm not in the credits of anything. Mm. Or I'm not listed in the credits for Street Fighter the movie. Although I'm sure that does have credits. Yes, unfortunately, a lot of these actors have very generic names, so I don't know if I would be able to find them. Policeman on motorcycle. Motorcyclist number one. Motorcyclist number two.
Nice. Yeah. But does this game get a replay for you or?
No. I might try like parts two and three because I remember from working at the game store that part two was like super popular. That people really thought two was a big upgrade.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'll probably play that a little bit. I don't think I'll go back to this.
Well, what are you going to play next?
I'm going to go with Night Trap.
Nice.
I have so many versions of Night Trap. And I would just say, like, if you don't want to play Night Trap, you can just watch a playthrough. Or you can download a walkthrough, and it takes exactly 25 minutes and 2 seconds of your precious time.
Nice.
To do a complete 100% playthrough of Night Trap.
Yeah, very cool. Nice little October game there.
Yeah. And what are you going with?
Another October game. A game that was supposed to be on the Nintendo 64, Luigi's Mansion. It's actually retro now.
And let's see if they do a Switch remake based solely off you picking it.
Yes. Didn't they already do that? Or was that on the 3DS?
No, there's a sequel on 3DS. And then another sequel on Switch. I played the 3DS sequel in... I did not like it.
Have you?
It is not nearly as good as the original game.
Okay.
They took a lot of, like, there were a lot of things that made Luigi's Mansion kind of fun, and the 3DS sequel does almost none of them.
Yeah.
It's like you're going through like a series of haunted hotels or something, and. You have to keep replaying the stages over and over because you get like new weapon upgrades and then you have to go through stages you've already done.
Yeah.
Whereas Luigi's Mansion, you really felt like you're in this big haunted mansion and, you know, you're trying to find your way through it. Mm-hmm. This was a whole different feel, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Well, if, any of our listeners play any of these games or have any news items or projects they want to talk about or anything fun and retro, please email us. email@retrogameclub.net. That is email@retrogameclub.net. Hit us up on Facebook that Zach helps run all our social media. That's facebook.retrogameclub.net. Gets you right to our page. We have Twitter @RGCPodcast and Instagram. And what's our Instagram link? Every time I don't know it.
I go to the link tree.
Yeah.
You'll find it there.
Yeah, there's a link tree there.
Link tree. And it looks like it is... One of these is Instagram. I don't want to get an eating disorder, so I'm not going there. RGC Podcast.
There you go. So thank you, Zach, for doing all those. And looks like we got some emails.
Yeah, we got a couple emails. I will get the first one from Majors. He wanted to know if you... had heard about this case and add-on board for Mister that consoleizes it.
Yes.
He has a link to a video.
And it's great. And pre-orders started. During a video for the pre-orders, they said, we're doing this in a way where we will have enough systems for everyone. And the day after the video released, they were out of systems and I was not able to order one. But I am excited for this. Yes, it is a very cool system. If anyone's looking to do some emulation, I suggest RMC Mr. Consoleize system. So if you just Google on YouTube RMC Mr., you'll get taken to the links to it. And I suggest if anyone wants to upgrade their home system, now is the time with this thing. It makes it so easy. And you could use original controllers.
What else is in here? The Genesis being considered more grown up than the Super Nintendo, which I guess is something I must have said. And just commenting that a lot of Sega's ad campaigns were focused on that. So that was obviously part of the do the whole Genesis does what Nintendo don't campaign. Yeah, it's funny how Sega went from like seeming more grown up to seeming much more juvenile just a few years later, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Sports games on the Turbo graphics are laughable. Yeah, he generally agrees with that. He says there's a couple interesting ones. There's one called Taking It to the Hoop, which if you get the import version is called USA Basketball. And he mentions that he got it recently in a lot, basically for free. GameCube launch. Yeah, I think I'd mentioned that it's hard to talk. Did I mention that the thing I'm struggling with is talking about like gaming sort of that close to 9/11, right? Because it was such just a bizarre time. Bizarre in terror. I don't mean bizarre like in a comical way. I mean it was in a terrible way. And he notes that it also impacted shipping, like much like some of the you know shortages and issues we've had in the past year, that GameCube launch was impacted by 9/11 causing shipping delays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which if again that's the worst thing you experienced from 9/11. You got off pretty easy.
Yeah.
Parallel port devices. There is apparently also a flash card for the TurboGrafx-16 PC engine that uses parallel port for ROM transfers.
Cool.
Oh, it was only 4 meg.
Nice.
Oh, wow. Best way to play NES games. So he sent us some pictures. Maybe Zach will put these on Instagram of some custom Nestor DC menus that he built.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he has like a custom printed disc and cool. It looks really cool.
Yeah.
TV sports football. I'm sorry, I'm trying to fight off a sneeze. I don't know what is going on with me. Like, we had the windows open all day. I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
So he was not very impressed with it when he first played it. Seemed like mostly it was just a novelty that there was any. It's the only like cue card football game. He played through a whole game, and by the third quarter, he thinks he finally understood how to play it. Which seems to be a little long. He said the voices are very good, which I don't think we mentioned. Those voices, and that the computer auto passes the ball sometimes. Or is that how passing works? I never really figured out how passing is supposed to work in this game.
It's not intuitive.
Okay. And his final takeaway is that it's easily the best cartridge football game on the TurboGrafx-16.
That's what you said, too.
Yeah. He said Road Rash. He has a personal story about buying Road Rash. Back in 91, EA had a promotion of buying two games and getting one for free. Or I think I remember this promotion. The free one was from a list, and you had to mail it in with proof of purchase and all that. And when he was choosing this free game, he saw Road Rash listed, but at the time had no idea what it was about. So a friend suggested that he get Dark Castle because they remember it being, quote, pretty cool.
Wow.
In hindsight, he made the wrong call.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go. Yeah, Dark Castle is one that I will safely say that is one of the worst games on the Genesis.
Oh, yeah. Bad, bad choice. And, yeah, Majors, thanks for that email. And
thank you, yeah.
Sam writes in, he has two thoughts about the Nintendo 64 anniversary. Like I said, you know, the console was a huge introduction to 3D environments and the analog control, and it just completely changed how he interacted with games and how he could explore. And he just recalls, you know, exploring through 007 and Banjo-Kazooie, just looking all over for hidden items through the 3D spaces. And second, Mario Kart 64, you know, really set a standard for how many features you could have in a game. You know, looking back, you could play the game with up to 4 players with multiple modes, multiple tracks, different characters. It's not the best part of Mario Kart 64, but, you know, it was just the simple features that were pretty cool. And you look at titles, you know, like Switch Mario Party having, you know, just 4 boards and how it's okay. And, you know, how is that okay in 2021? And, you know, he feels that the Nintendo 64 had quite a few titles that brought a lot to the system. And, Yeah, and he just looks back and with positive vibes from all that. So, yeah, so Sam, thank you so much for that email. And we have some social media questions, too.
Yeah, we got feedback on the Nintendo 64. Like, someone commented it's the only Nintendo console they have not owned. big shout out to the multiplayer games like WCW, GoldenEye, Mario Kart, lots of four-player games. And then later on, we went back to revisit the system, F-Zero, Wipeout, and Star Fox 64.
Oh, I forgot to mention Star Fox 64. That's a great one. And F-Zero is on my to playlist too. That's one that I have not played on the Nintendo 64.
And then, all right, one of my biggest memories of the 64 launch was wondering why customers waited a year for the N64 when they could have bought a PS1 or Saturn. Huh. Yeah. A lot of blind faith, you say, with customers confident that they will get the better system.
And some people write in about TV sports football. One person only had the hockey and basketball ones for TurboGrafx-16, so he's excited to try this one out. And someone else writes in that he played it on the Amiga, which I would like to see. I would like to see what that looks like. And he says it was a big step up from the C64 port, and he likes TV sports basketball too. So yeah, I'm gonna have to look at videos of those. All right, we have new Game Club games, Luigi's Mansion and Night Trap. So,
yeah. So again, email at retrogameclub.net if you want to send us any feedback. Good, bad, indifferent. Let's just stick with good.
Yes, please.
I'll delete anything else. All right. So thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you.